If you've hit middle age, did you turn around one day and think, where did all my friends go? Work, kids, responsibilities. Sometimes there's not much time left for just hanging out. What has worked? I would love to hear your stories. I tried a book club for a while, but people kept moving away or changing their work days. It was just too hard in the end. How did you manage it? What about asking your old classmates to reenact your best day of school in a parking lot? Or flying overseas to track down your long-lost best friend? Billy Baker did all that to try to avoid being another sad and lonely statistic. He's a staff writer at the Boston Globe. The book's called We Need to Hang Out. Billy, welcome to Life Matters.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, loneliness is such a loaded issue, isn't it? Tell us how it went down when your editor decided you would be perfect to explore this topic.
Well, they conned me with the idea they had a story I'd be perfect for. And when I sat down, the editor looked at me and said, we want you to write about how middle-aged men have no friends. And I, as I'm having this existential crisis, wondering why I'm perfect for this story, this editor is rattling off all these dire statistics about how loneliness is an epidemic in America, and it seems to be a problem elsewhere in the world, and how it has these real dire consequences for not just your mental health, but your physical health. So all of a sudden, I went from, you know, loneliness isn't something you want to really give too much thought to, and I was thrust right into the middle of this issue and had to admit, you know what? I think I am perfect for this story, not because I'm unusual, but because I think my story is fairly typical.
I love the narrative arc you went through from leaving the editor's office to arriving at your desk about 30 seconds later. Oh, that is me. What was it like, that realization that, you know, you're experiencing this thing that's quite stigmatized?
I mean, you know, the first thing I did was try and talk my way out of this assignment, you know, and I just went through all the guys in my head that I think of as my best friends. And, you know, it was, oh gosh, I haven't seen that guy in a couple of weeks, and I haven't seen that guy in years. And so pretty soon it was like, I am one of these statistics that I just heard. And it was a revelation, but also it was a problem I quickly wanted to try and solve.
And did you feel lonely, Billy?
I'm not sure I did. You know, I'm lucky. Technically, a lot of things were going really well in my life. I had a good career. I have a lovely wife, a family. But on the day-to-day, friendship just wasn't a part of my daily life. And I think the saddest part of the realization was that I didn't feel like it should. I had put friendship in this category as I'd hit middle age, where it was something I did when the important stuff was done. But I mean, the important stuff is never done. And my folly was not really realizing that friendship is one of the important things. You know, the data is there. If you want to live a healthy, happy, long life, friendship is right at the top of the list of things that will get you there. You know, as wild as it is to think, if you don't want to see the doctor, see your friends. Well, there's a truth there. You know, it's not eating your broccoli, but it's the rewards are very real.
Billy Baker's our guest. His book's called We Need to Hang Out. And Billy, I was interested to read that you said you knew what people are doing kind of in the background because of Facebook, but you hadn't seen them in real life. What happened to the friends you used to have? What was that process of losing touch?
I mean, I think it was happening to all of us. We just got caught up in our busy lives. Children eat up a lot of time. And I think that social media may have been this kind of false crutch, you know, where like I knew what their children looked like. I knew their names. I knew, you know, the general high points of their life. But was that enough? You know, and so a part of this book, this journey I went on, I got rid of social media. And all I can tell you is that it was transformative for me because, you know, I had to actually reach out to friends in real life. And when we got together, we were no longer robbed of the joys of catching up. That sort of broad idea of thinking what you know about a person just based on their curated life on social media was gone. So I had to actually do it the way we used to do it, which was, let's get together and hear how things are going.
Oh my God, a genuine friendship based on physically being together. Well, and Billy, I was interested to see that one psychiatrist pointed out to you that people tend to choose their kids and their work over their friends. So they don't cut corners when it comes to work and those family relationships. But what are you meant to do? I mean, where do you shoehorn the friends in? Do you stop sleeping?
Well, what seems to work is to have something that's just on the calendar. You know, you had referenced a book club. It's these things like that that are on the schedule, and then life works around them. So regularity, having a consistent thing, In the book, I refer to them as velvet hooks, these things that are like soft connectors. You know, no one wants another ironclad commitment on their calendar. But the book club, you know, the poker night, whatever it might be, the bowling night, these are the things that are tried and true, you know, social bonding tools. And they seem to be, I don't want to say dying, but it feels like my parents' generation was much more active in these sort of built-in, you know, men's groups, women's groups, whatever they might be. And there seems to be a renaissance for recreating that or starting afresh with new ideas that will fill that role.
There are lots of people wanting to share their thoughts with us, Billy Baker. Tess is in Geelong. Tess, what did you do?
Oh, hi. I was in my 50s. I still am. And I had a big global role, so I hadn't really put down roots anywhere. And I guess I turned around in my 50s and thought, well, how's that going to serve me when I'm older? So I moved, strangely, I moved to Geelong, which is it's a country town in my view, but it's a great place. And I took a local job, I halved my salary, and I decided to stop being the workaholic and talking about work all the time. And I just approached this new job by talking about hobbies and interests and really personal fun things that I really couldn't bring to my corporate role. And I found that I made six fabulous female friends really quite quickly. So it was fantastic.
Wow. So you had time, you had roots, and you had a different set of interests to discuss. That sounds like a wonderful combination, Tess.
And a really different mindset. But I had to halve my salary. I had to pick myself out of the context that I was comfortable in and just almost be the person that I couldn't be before and attract the sort of people that I was hoping to spend, you know, the rest of my years around.
Well, I hope that that's what's happened, Tess. It sounds delightful. Thanks for calling in. Rod is in Tasmania. Rod, tell us what you've been going through.
Right. So I've always enjoyed cycling in Tasmania. Of course, it's a beautiful place to cycle. And about 5 or 10 years ago, when cycling became more popular, groups developed. And now I must have about 15 to 20 friends, new friends mostly, that I cycle with, which is great. 2 or 3 times a week, we have a sort of a light banter afterwards and a coffee. And it's great. It's been really interesting to find that. So for mainly retired guys like myself, it's something to look forward to. And we're all from different backgrounds, so it's interesting to chat. And there you go. Keeps us fit too.
Well, I was going to say, Rod, is it useful to have something that you're doing together to take the pressure off the actual socialisation side of things? I mean, you do socialise, but you're also there for another reason.
Exactly. Yes, that's it. That's a common interest, sort of enjoying the countryside, cycling, and keeping fit, and gives our wives a little break and is out of the house too.
I'm sure they're happy when you come back too, Rod. That's lovely. Thanks for calling in.
Good. Nice to chat. Tiddly.
You too. Val's in northern New South Wales. Val, tell us your story.
I've been a member of service clubs all my life. When I was younger, it was Apex. And when I was in later years, it's been Rotary. And you've always got friends in those organisations. They're always keen to have new members. It's stimulating. There's interesting people to meet, projects to run. It's just, it's a no-brainer, I'm afraid. If you're looking for to get into new to a community, go and meet some of your local service clubs and get involved in the community. And it's great, really good.
It must feel really rewarding too, Val.
Yeah, it is, all the time.
Yeah.
And bit surprised that people don't realise that these organisations are out there. They fulfil a really good community service, and at the same time, there's a lot of very valuable friendships and stuff out there. So go out and find one if you're feeling a little bit on your own. There's quite a few all over the place, and I'll be very keen to see you.
Exactly. They're on the signs on the way into town and out of town in most of the towns I know. Very easy to find. Billy Baker's our guest. He's a journalist with the Boston Globe, and he's written a book called We Need to Hang Out. Billy, I mean, we heard from Tess before how it really takes you out of your comfort zone sometimes, making new friends. You've got to take that leap and step forward. Did you do that with new people, or did you decide to look up your old friends first?
I went on sort of two journeys. At the beginning, I was focused on getting the band back together, repairing my relationships from the past. And then I shifted midway through this project where I heard this quote that kind of changed my life. It was on an American television show, and the actress said that a best friend is not a person, it's a tier. And by thinking of it that way, it made me feel free, where it's like, I'm not betraying all these best friendships I have in the past, but what I need to do is build new friends in the present. I'm one of these people, like the woman who just called, who, you know, moved somewhere away from, you know, my childhood friends, my childhood home. So I had to build a squad in the present. You know, I think humans are tribal animals. If you don't have active membership in a tribe, you have to find one or you have to create one. And so it's great to, you know, find a club that already exists. In my case, what I ultimately did, you know, the culmination of this journey was I tried to start a crew of guys that met up on a Wednesday night, because in this weird thought experiment I got locked into, it was like, it's great that I have a lot of friends, but in my present day, I just don't have anyone to grab a beer with on a Wednesday night. So I need to find that. So what I ultimately did was convert a lot of people from acquaintances into friends. And that's a little tricky part of the whole thing. I mean, you got to put in a little effort. You have to make yourself a little bit vulnerable. You have to be willing to reach out and say, hey, we need to hang out on this date at this time. We have to figure out something to do and not do that kind gesture of, you know, we should get together sometime, because that often falls through too easily. So I, you know, put myself in a lot of awkward situations where I put in the effort to make it happen. And in each case where I made myself vulnerable, which is, you know, a condition that men are often taught not to put themselves into, I was rewarded. So I think that, you know, one of the beautiful parts of getting older is that you're more willing to be honest. And anytime I was honest with someone about, you know, I kind of like you, I feel like we should hang out, you know, it was reciprocated.
That's really interesting, what you say about that vulnerability seen as something that, you know, men don't do. And it's so sad, isn't it? Because so many men are missing out on those opportunities to have rich and rewarding and, you know, life-prolonging friendships. What can we do to change that, do you think, Billy? Are there conversations you can have among your male friends that can help people see it might be useful to be vulnerable with each other?
I mean, I've tried a lot of things, and what seems to work the best is to not walk in the door with that approach. You know, there's this thing we know, there's something very fascinating in the science about the way that men and women interact. And it's women talk face to face and men talk shoulder to shoulder. And this is known from doing photo studies where sociologists creep around, take photos of people interacting and analyze them for patterns. And it's very clear. So for men, you know, the best thing to do is to find an activity or something we're doing, and then maybe the magic comes out. Then maybe you get to these sort of intimate moments. But I don't think it's to say, let's get together and talk about our feelings, because that's something men need to do. I don't think that feels a little forced. I don't think that's going to fly. But, you know, if you find something to do with your hands, maybe then you get to those deeper moments.
Interesting. Let's take some more calls here on Life Matters on Radio National. Caroline's in Melbourne. Caroline, tell us your story.
Oh, hi. I joined a belly dance group about 10 years ago when my son was a toddler, and it was a way for me to start exercising again and to reconnect with other women. And I've made friends that have lasted through this time, and I just found that it's a really nice form of social connection and exercise and friendship.
It's a really inclusive place, isn't it, too, belly dancing? Like, it doesn't matter what size your body is, it's for you.
Yes, it's all ages and all levels of fitness. It's not like you might see a belly dancer at a restaurant, but that's only one aspect of it. Often it's just women dancing for other women, and you can perform if you want to or you don't have to. It's really up to the individual.
Oh, Caroline, I'm glad you found your tribe. Thank you.
Yes.
Paul's in southern New South Wales. Paul, what's working for you?
Seniors cricket. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I've always extolled the virtues of team sport as a retired educator for children. But for seniors, and I'm in my 71st year, I believe that cricket, the fraternity of cricket, is a wonderful thing. And it's I've made lifelong friends just in the 10 years I've been in seniors cricket, and it's an extraordinary thing, really.
So, Paul, the friendships that you made at cricket, do they come out of cricket as well into your home or other settings, or is it basically just cricket-based relationships?
No, it's not. The nature of cricket is, because it's a slow game, you've got a lot of time to talk, waiting to bat or between innings, and you get some wonderful conversations going, and that extends beyond cricket to your own life. And I've toured with the national side a number of times, and I've shared rooms with men similar ages, and the life experiences of those men are quite make you feel like you've put things in perspective. You know, things are good.
That's fantastic.
We've lost some men along the way because of that happens at our age, and it's wonderful to reflect on their lives and what you've learned from them.
Indeed, and they can continue on among you. Paul, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to hear from you. Cynthia's in Sydney. Cynthia, we've got a couple of minutes left. What's working for you to keep that pep in your step?
Well, when I was a teenager, I'm a New Zealander, and of course in New Zealand we have a lot of tramping clubs and skiing clubs. And when I was a teenager, I joined a tramping club, and as I say, there were lots of them because we had a lot of hills, and I spent my life very involved in tramping and organising things in the club, and eventually I met my husband in the bush, and we've been married for over 50 years now, and all our tramping club friends are still friends, even though they are in New Zealand and we're in Sydney, and we meet them when we go over there, and they send us birthday greetings. So it's a lifelong thing. One year we actually went to five weddings of tramping club people who were marrying. So it's a great place to also meet somebody that you want to marry as well.
Indeed. Well, you'd want to be friends with them, wouldn't you, before it blossomed into something else. Cynthia, thank you. Lovely to hear these stories of different ways that people are connecting with each other. Billy Baker's our guest. He's written a book called We Need to Hang Out. And Billy, before we run out of time, I really want to hear about the plane trip you took without telling your ex-best friend to track him down overseas. What happened?
Oh, I did tell him, but what had happened was when I wrote this initial article that launched the book, I wrote about, my two best friends. And after the article came out, one of them said, oh, this is going to sound awful, but I forgot to tell you that I moved to Vienna, Austria. So I hopped on a plane and in a very dramatic sense and kind of dashed across the world to try and right the ship before it failed. And there was something about that effort that was very sort of, touching for both of us, and we're going stronger than ever. But if I could just make a point, like each of these callers it's wonderful. Everyone here has found their velvet hook. They're a thing that they're using, a way to be friends with their friends or a way to connect with the tribe, to find one, to link up with other people. So, I've been hearing from a lot of people who aren't as successful, but I think the lessons are here. Like if you are sitting here listening and you're lonely, reach out to a friend, try and find your tribe, your club, whatever it might be. There are so many different ways to gear some friendship around a shared interest. So I'm just so happy to hear from all these callers who are doing it right.
I know, and I loved that when you did catch up with Rory, you had a really powerful moment. You shared some thoughts and feelings, and then you went and played ping pong in the streets. So, you had a bit of both. You had the deep emotional stuff and the just hanging out and having fun. I think we've just got time to hear from you, Billy, about redoing your best day of high school in a parking lot in an attempt to really have that sense of hanging out and having fun. How did that go?
Yeah, so the idea was, what was my favorite day? And it was the day, I don't know if you do this in Australia, but in America, there's this thing called like skip day or ditch day, where just everybody skips school together. And so my idea was to try and do it again as adults. And we did it on a Friday. And the idea was you just have to call in sick to work or call in sick to life or whatever it is and meet up. And sure enough, so many people came and we reconnected, and there's something liberating about just sort of being intentionally juvenile at an age when you're technically in charge. And yeah, that was a special event for everyone who came. And I think this spring we're going to try it again, because I think everyone needs an excuse to ditch out on life on a Friday.
I reckon everyone would have bounced back home or to the office after that. That would have just been fantastic. Billy Baker, it's been really great chatting to you today. Thanks for sharing your story with us, and all the best with those friendships in the future.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Call a friend.
Indeed. Billy Baker is a staff writer for the Boston Globe, and his book's called We Need to Hang Out, a memoir of making friends. This is Life Matters.